Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Osio Ginalili. Boy, I flubbed that one. Osio Ginalili Tahiju Tahigu, which means hello, relatives. I'm fine. How are you? Tonight, special night, we're going to be talking with Oklava attorney Matt Pappas, first of all, and after that, Brother Jim Diamond of Oklava Native American Church of Acts in Missouri, Arkansas, will be joining us, and the ubiquitous Badger and myself are always here. And anyway, everybody's mics are live, and everybody, welcome to the show.
Hi. Here, Bluewater. How are you? Good to have you on the line, Matt.
Doing pretty good.
Thanks, Joy.
Well, go ahead and direct traffic, Joy.
Well, I'm just glad that we have Matt on the line because I know there is a lot of interesting and exciting things going on in the legal aspects of Oklava, and I think he's the best advocate to take it from here and kind of fill everybody in with what we're doing and what's going on and how everybody's future is going to be a lot better since we have such a warrior attorney like him on our team. So,
well,
I'm eager to hear from Matt.
Comment. You know, I was on a radio show this morning in Orange County, California, talking about the church and its sacrament and worships and how things are going with the process, the discrimination that takes place regularly. And I got some accolades as well from the host of that show, who's also a very talented attorney that is engaged in the fight for medical cannabis on the secular side. So I'll talk a little bit about, you know, the direction that we're going. Joy, you might, if you have any questions, pop in and, you know, just tell me. But we talked earlier about, you know, just discussing the cases that we're dealing with and issues we're dealing with that are out there. First of all, we have the case in Sonoma County, which is a key case for us. It involves the branch in Sonoma that was cultivating cannabis and was doing so in full conformance with church practices. It had been blessed and all was being done properly under the sanction of the church. When the last October, the sheriff's department in Sonoma County decided to come in and treating it like it was some sort of criminal felony creating facility. Of course, that's for growing a plant that we now know is a miracle plant in terms of its healing qualities. That's what the sheriffs come in to attack. And they come in and attack at the facility, destroying its sacrament that was growing at the time, the cannabis sacrament. They were notified in advance of the destruction of that and the arrest of the church leader that it was, in fact, a church, and they decided to attack anyway. We filed a lawsuit against Sonoma County alleging violation of RLUIPA, the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. And I think it's important to kind of look at this. This is not specifically an American Native Indigenous American peoples issue. This is an issue that relates to religious beliefs and the idea that when the white people came over from Europe to America, they did so to escape religious persecution. They did, I mean, in large part, that's why they came over here. They were part of minority religions that came over here. They were welcomed for the most part by the indigenous American people that they met. That's why we end up having Thanksgiving and the pilgrims and Indians celebrating together Thanksgiving. And, you know, as time progressed, of course, we invaded, took the land, a lot of destruction went on. But the idea that we'd come over to escape the religious persecution led to what we now have constitutionally, which are protections against religious discrimination. We've expanded that legislatively. One of the laws that provides for that is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, which provides that if government passes a zoning or land use law that in operation substantially burdens the religious rights of an individual or group of people or church, it's very broad in its application, then the standard for reviewing that law is not what we normally have, which is rational basis. And the way I like to explain rational basis is it would be like preponderance of the evidence in the law. You just have to have a fact. 50%, then the government can say, oh, our law is valid. So basically, government creates a law, and it really doesn't have a big burden to prove that its law is valid and enforce that law. But when a land use or zoning regulation substantially burdens somebody's religious rights, then the level of review is raised up to what we call strict scrutiny, which is more like proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And here, that's what we have. We have folks that are practicing their religion in Sonoma County, California. They're doing so sincerely. The key is sincerely. The key isn't whether or not their religious belief is appropriate under somebody's subjective review. Otherwise, we wouldn't have freedom of religion. And I use an analogy on this, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which is a church where folks are wearing colanders on their heads, I believe because they think alien rays are beaming down on them. And a woman wanted to get her driver's license in a state, and the state's DMV refused to give her her driver's license because they wanted her to take off her colander. And so she took them to court under the religious freedom laws. And, of course, the court can't look at whether or not the idea there's alien rays beaming down and the colander protects you is something that's valid or not. The court can only look at whether or not that's a sincere belief that's a substantial part of the religious beliefs of the group proffering that as their religion. And in that case, of course, the woman ended up winning and had the picture taken with the colander on her head. You can look that up on the internet. The bottom line is we have the same thing here. We have folks that sincerely believe in cannabis is one of the sacraments that's critical to their practice of religious belief. And the idea that there are some tribes and the Native American, some tribes that have one type of sacrament or some that have the other, some that have different ones of those. You know what that helps people? You know who that helps? That helps the federal sovereigns. the federal government, the people that brought you the Bureau of Indian Assassins. That's who that helps, because that's a divide-and-conquer system. That's so Native Americans can fight amongst one another, keeping themselves down instead of moving themselves upward and agreeing and saying, you know, this is because cannabis is a plant, just like peyote is a plant, just like an orange is a plant. And it's my understanding, I'm not an indigenous American person, but my understanding that those old plants can heal, that we need to love Mother Earth and take care of her and use those things that she provides to us. And so with that thought process, cannabis is one of those plants. All this fight that goes on between American Native tribes and folks about, oh, well, that's not really a sacrament. Now, all that is designed to do is further the goal of the federal government, the people that brought you the Trail of Tears and all of the killing of Native Americans originally. Andrew Jackson, that bunch, that's who brought you that. When they say federally recognized, federal means those people, the Bureau of Indian Assassins that killed Native Americans. That's who that means. Any credence given to the word federal is offensive. It's absolutely offensive. The federal government has gone beyond its enumerated powers. It is operating outside the scope of the authority it was even given by the people that framed the Constitution. So that whole concept strikes negatively with me. And so it's very important. It's very important that when we're thinking about religious rights and religious beliefs, that at issue here, it's not about blood type. It's not about what percentage of blood. This is about beliefs. You don't have to be Italian to be Roman Catholic. You don't have to be Chinese to be Buddhist. It's a belief system. And of course, it would be better if lots of people believe in the value of Mother Earth and Father Sky and the Great Spirit, because then we wouldn't be destroying our Earth as quickly as we are. I'll go back to the Pilgrims and the importance of the Pilgrims. And when they came over here, Joy, you know this, when the Pilgrims came over, they were welcomed with open arms by Indigenous American people. It wasn't a closed, exclusive thing. It was, let's advance a thought process that's positive, and that's what needs to happen here. So the lawsuit in Sonoma County, which is a critical lawsuit to what we're doing here, alleges that California's, or Sonoma County's, which is bolstered by California legal decision called Riverside versus Inland Empire, that decision, a land use decision, doesn't meet the strict scrutiny requirement that we have in RLUIPA. And in fact, it doesn't. And if a church wants to operate, it can't be subjected to the type of rampant discrimination. It's interesting. Catholic churches can give wine to people that are under 21. They can take that sacrament. Wineries can be built to produce wine for the Catholic Church, and those wineries are not subject to the same zoning regulations and land. They're protected by RLUIPA. They're protected by that Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Law, which are the acronym for it. And in fact, the whole purpose of these laws is to say, just because you're the majority religion, i.e. Christian, Catholic, whatever that is, if you're a minority religion, and it's specifically in the law, you will be protected as well. And it's important that we bring that idea forward. Joy, sorry, go ahead.
Huh? No, I was listening to you. I'm totally agreeing with everything you're saying.
Well, I heard you pop in there. I didn't. Maybe you have a question or something. Is there some question that you have in respect to this?
I had an idea on it too, though, and that is... You're tying in the religious belief and then and the land utilization, and what I was wondering is, couldn't this same avenue of thought be used under the idea that, you know, in most of the Native American tribes, indigenous peoples, you know, their religious belief actually encompasses the entire planet, if not the entire creation, but at least Mother Earth. And so this little patch of land, Sonoma County, is only a piece, a particle of Mother Earth. So under that idea, then the Mother Earth would be the big party of, or however you want, I don't know what words I'm searching for here, it'd be the main thing. And the,
you know, when President
Sonoma
Grant
County
was,
would be subordinate to that.
It is. Well, of course, that's absolutely right. I mean, the concept, look, important here to the mission of James Mooney in the formation of Oklava. And I think it goes back to the whole concept of indigenous American people's beliefs in their religious beliefs.
Uh-oh, did we lose him?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. I didn't make note of his number. Dang. Well, let's hope he calls back. Shoot, he's probably still talking. Yeah. I didn't make okay, hang on just one second. I might have he was 949. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get him on. Well, I'll be darned. Wait a minute. Here we go. Okay. Yes. Something happened on your end, Matt.
Sorry, guys.
You got cut off somehow. You were just getting into the mission of James Mooney.
Well, James Mooney's mission is, I mean, one of the things that he told me when I first came to Salt Lake and met with him in Utah last year was ultimately we need to protect the rainforest and we need to protect the earth. And I think I will tell you, I was quoted in an Oregon newspaper. I was up with Joy in respect to a lawsuit that had been filed on her behalf. And in that article, I was actually a little bit frustrated talking to reporters in Washington, D.C., and it just landed after being in Columbus. I'm talking to the reporter, and I said, well, Joy and these people, they really believe this stuff. And I'm going to say that because I'm more secular. I'm not on the religious side. I'm the lawyer that's representing these concepts and ideas as we move through court and process. But the bottom line is James Mooney is a very spiritual man who believes, I mean, I've sat with him when we're talking about people who have been adversely affected and tears come to his eyes. He is a sincere believer and great leader in these concepts and ideas. One of the things that he had promulgated was the importance of growing membership in the church, growing the concept so that we can save and influence change to save the rainforest and to protect our earth from the destruction that's being done with the rate of global warming that's going on, which there's an entire party of people in this country who say it's not even happening. Okay, we know, of course, that it is, but because science tells every valid scientist on the planet says that it is happening. But at the rate that it's going, we're going to destroy this planet so that our children and grandchildren don't have a place to live, and we're doing it at a pace that's unbelievable. And so I think James Mooney's idea that we work to save the planet, to give the respect to Mother Earth, and not destroy it is critical. And Oklava's vision and mission in doing that and accomplishing that is something that's very important to growing the church's membership, not just through the divide and conquer concept of blood types and federally recognized, enemy recognized. That's what that means. When we say federally recognized, it means enemy recognized. That's what that means. That's all that. It's like Bureau of Indian Assassins. That's what that means. Those are the people that will pay $10 or $20 a head for each Indian that somebody killed and bought to them. That's the same group that we have working today. That's who they are. NARF, all these people, that's what they are. They're a bunch of, let me just say the word, I won't swear on the radio, they're scumbags is what they are. So we need to focus on the concept that James has, which is expansive and open to the idea that everybody can participate in religious beliefs. And when we do that, we can work together to stop the things that are harming planet Earth. And I will, as counsel for Oklava, continue to push that forward. Cannabis is a plant. It's used spiritually by numbers of people. Maybe those ceremonies and rituals have changed over time. There's nothing that says for religion to be valid, it had to be created in 0 BC or 100 BC or some prior time. There's no past requirement of history for religion to be valid. Because the people that are talking about, you know, the spaghetti monster folks, the people with the – that didn't get created until just recently, yet it has the same validity. It's the sincerity and the belief that matters, not the archaic time frame or that the Roman Catholics were using their beads and things back, you know, 500, 600, 1,000 years ago. And I'm not being disrespectful to any religion, Roman Catholics, Mormon, Buddhists, other or otherwise. I'm just saying that all religions have to be given the same level of belief respect when it comes to freedom of exercise as the others. And that's what is being done here. And so in terms of James's vision, we need to expand the direction Oklava is going to bring in more members who can help forward this idea of the importance of Mother Earth. You know, there's a lot of folks out there who have gotten tired of pharmaceuticals that you get prescribed a pharmaceutical, and the next day on television, you're watching an ad, and it's an attorney law firm telling you, oh, my gosh, have you used this prescription drug? Because if you have, call this 800 number if you've experienced heart palpitations or this and that or death, whatever it might be. People who've gone beyond that and said, we just don't want that. We'd like to go back to the natural system. And a good example of that with respect to cannabis, for instance, would be the number one prescribed sleeping aid drug for insomnia. The two drugs, Lunesta and Ambien being the number one prescribed, have many, many side effects that are harmful, terribly bad and harmful side effects. Yet cannabis, which can be just as effective or more effective at treating insomnia, doesn't have those side effects. I am shocked every time I see the kind of posters and things that are out on, or signage that's out on freeways. I saw one the other day, and it was put up by some group, and it said, marijuana is not a medicine. It is a dangerous drug. I wonder if we tell the children that have Dravet syndrome, who had 300 grand mal seizures a week, parents who would sign do not resuscitate orders on because they went through such pain, and cannabis is the only thing that has resolved that for them. So they go from 300 a week to one a month. If we were to show them that sign, what they would say, or the people that have had a higher quality of life when they're dying of terminal cancer, people with multiple sclerosis or Crohn's disease, it's terribly painful. And you see, that's what the United States of America has brought you. That's what it's brought you. Somebody on a thread the other day on Facebook said, what do I need to have a state recommendation? It was a Native American. Do I need to have a state recommendation here in Michigan to use cannabis? And I was just shocked. Here you are in a sovereign nation that the United States of America has broken treaty after treaty after treaty with these sovereign nations. And certainly the Bureau of Indian Assassins and the rest of them have made their point, haven't they, when you have people that believe they have to comply with some state medical marijuana law for a plant that is proven to help people medically. This entire country's system of laws. The fact that this government ever had the power or thought that it had the power to pass the Federal Controlled Substances Act, Title II of the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act, passed in 1971 by President Nixon's administration and that Congress at his behest. The entire idea, the audacity of the federal courts and the federal government to believe that it can usurp that power from the states and from the sovereign Indian tribes that it has agreements with is outrageous. People shouldn't be on here trying to kiss the federal government's rear end. People should be talking about how do we, as a group, without the divide and conquer, come out together and make a difference against these insane laws. The fact that I'm on here talking about lawsuits for a Native American church to use the sacraments that they have used in the past, and I can go tribe after tribe that have used those, despite the people in the Indian community who are friends with BIA and NARF, who are friends with the enemy, the Bureau of Indian Assassins, despite those people, okay, the people that want to be they want to be exclusive, not inclusive. They don't want to have other people come into the belief system. It has to be blood-based for them. That's what the federal government wants them to say. Despite those people, what we have here in this country, we have treaties between the United States and the Indian tribes that should have been realized, followed, practiced. It's just outrageous. The whole concept of what's going on here, that we would think that we need to be submissive to this out-of-control federal government is outrageous. Now, am I saying, should we pick up arms and go attack the federal government? No, that's not what I'm saying. I think the framers came up with a system that allows us to focus on change. But that change requires people to get up, believe they can make a difference, and vote. And I've heard too many people in the Native American community and in other minority communities in this country say, my vote doesn't make a difference. So I've never voted. The number of people that I've heard that have never voted before shocks me. These changes need to be made, and it needs to be made through action taken by people now. And the fact that we'd even have these lawsuits is a travesty. Never should happen. We shouldn't be having to fight to do those beliefs. One thing, and I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but let me just, I guess it's my moment to vent here, Joy. You know, you look at the Federal Controlled Substances Act, the Title II of the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act. It's called the Drug Abuse Prevention and Control. You look at that law, and you see what is on Schedule I, the prohibited schedule of that drug, of that law that lists all of the prohibited drugs. Every single major American native sacrament is listed. Ayahuasca is listed. Peyote is listed. San Pedro is listed. Cannabis is listed. How is it that we haven't figured out that that was discriminatory at the time as well? Because it was. Okay?
Yeah.
This whole thing is a travesty for everybody that's having to fight it. And the fact that this government in the United States, the land of the free, home of the brave, has more people in prison than any other country on the face of the planet. Shame on the United States. Shame on the United States. If it wants to be a shining light, if John Kerry wants to go out and tell China to release political prisoners, then the United States needs to show that it is a leader in terms of human rights, that it actually stands up for human rights, that it doesn't just jail everybody based upon economic difference. In this country, people that don't have money can't get a fair trial. When you stand up and you listen to Bernie Sanders and you listen to the candidates that are out there, you should be concerned and you should be scared. These fascist candidates, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, they're fascists is what they are. They're police state lovers. They love the police department. That's who they love. They would never, ever want a police officer to be held accountable for something that police officer did wrong to citizens who were poor or minority. Neither of them, in my opinion. Now, you go to the more moderate candidates, John Kasich and Hillary Clinton. They're a little bit more moderate. But these are the people that have brought you the laws we have now. They sat in Congress while this stuff was going on.
Yeah.
And then you have Bernie Sanders, who sat in Congress, but who recognizes the problems here. We need some serious change. And this isn't a political ad for Bernie Sanders. But we need some serious change in this country. And that change doesn't come from the idea that we just keep putting people in jail. This is not the land of the free, home of the brave. It's a very scary place to be right now, given what government has done. And unless we stand up and make that change, and that includes the seventh generation of Native Americans, that vision, that prophecy of the seventh generation coming together and fighting for change, this is its land, their land, and it's all of ours because I was born in the United States, so to some degree I'm an indigenous American person that way. But we need to stand together with the beliefs that are, let's save Mother Earth. Let's stand up for people that might not have everything we have. And let's move forward positively. That's my campaign speech. Joy, and I'm running for president. I'm kidding. Okay.
Well, yeah.
But you would vote for me, Joy, wouldn't you?
You're on a roll.
Well, let me say that, you know, we're really thankful that you're on board. If there's anything that's useful, it's a passionate attorney.
Well, yeah. Probably better than a dispassionate attorney, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's what your public defenders are. They work for the court. So anyway, but your
defenders, they're hired to do a show, and they tend to not even put much effort into the show. You know,
that's right. Well, we sure appreciate you and pray for you and also pray that you can get the funding that you need to keep moving forward.
Yeah, Matt's
well,
been doing all
of
this work
of
for the church and so far, I mean, he hasn't received a cent from it, you know. And
We've received a little bit. It's just that overall we put more back in. You know, I was telling Joy the other day that, you know, we put, when somebody in the church is down, when somebody's been attacked, like the folks in Sonoma County or Joy in Oregon or Brandon back in Michigan, what we need to do as a church isn't just drop them and not support them. We need to support them 110%. And I think it's critically important that we do that. And so I put my money where my mouth is, and Joy, as you know, I've sent money, tried to help Joy do some things that would generate money during the time she's faced these issues, as well as the folks in Sonoma and other people across the country. And I think as a group, I was talking to one branch leader this morning in terms of commitment to funding the legal costs. This legal stuff isn't free, and I'm not some rich lawyer. Believe me, I'm just not. We have very limited funds because I'm focused on people, not on money. But our goal in doing that together, we can raise what's necessary to challenge the laws and win, and to do it more than just at the court level, but to do it at the legislative level as well. And I think if everybody who's involved in the church who's out listening today would do that and think about the positive values that has, we can take this idea out, gain membership, and then have real traction to make a difference.
Outstanding.
Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about the other cases besides Sonoma? Because I know there are
many.
Well,
we've got a case, Joy, that we're filing in Lomita, California. Lomita is a church branch that's recently opened. And what's happened there is the Sheriff's Department of Los Angeles County has been taunting folks, members, telling them that they're not really a church and they're going to get them and stalking them and doing those types of things. And so, again, this is a RLUIPA issue. It's an issue of they're not doing that down at the Catholic Church. So you don't see the sheriffs down at the Catholic Church taunting the priests and the members that are using wine as a sacrament. But, of course, at the Oklahoma Church, they're going to do that. So we're going to file a lawsuit along the same lines there in Los Angeles County. We have, of course, the lawsuit pending against the United States related to the taking of cannabis from the mail, Joy. As you recall, of course, you know this very well. Not only did they take that cannabis from the mail in violation not of RLUIPA, but of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, which applies to the federal government, they then were retaliatory with you, pulling you over in your car and acting in a retaliatory manner. And so that line of cases, the main federal case as well as your local cases, are moving forward, and we will get to a positive end on those, in my opinion. I'd like to, and again, affecting us in doing this are the resources that we have and the number of people we have to work on it, but we want to get motions filed in that case right away. There, we have the case, and I'm kind of going through on a priority basis the cases that we're working on in terms of priority. So we have Sonoma, we have Portland, we have the new case against Los Angeles County, which is, again, a federal issue case, the RLUIPA case issue. And then we have a case back in Michigan, which is Brandon Barnes. He was cultivating as a member of the church. Police raided him in Michigan, which is a medical marijuana state. They turned the case over to the federal sovereign, and I have a great deal of contempt for the federal sovereign. They don't like me much either. But the fact is the federal sovereign went ahead and filed charges under their outrageous Federal Controlled Substances Act against Brandon, because the federal judge there, these federal judges also think that they're just, and let me just say that I worked for a federal judge, and I respect that federal judge and a number of them, but there are some of them that get this idea that they're real important because they're federal judges that are appointed for life under Article 3 of our Constitution. The federal judge there denied him his religious defense, and so he took a plea. We were able to file a motion to hire the number one cannabis lawyer in Michigan to help on the appeal, Matt Abel in that state, who we filed a motion in the Sixth Circuit, and Brandon is free from incarceration during the appeal process. That's an important case as well. We have cases in Ohio involving the stopping of a medicine man who was going to administer sacrament to a young 5-year-old girl, and on his way was stopped by some sheriff's officers who decided that he wasn't a medicine man, despite him having his federally recognized ID as well as his Oklahoma ID, took all of his medicine that night. And he had been called in, by the way, to the hospital by a Pakistani woman who was a physician, a licensed physician. the mother of the child, and the child died that night. So we've got that issue. We have an issue where a college is trying to eject or suspend a student who is a member of the church because the student was using sacrament, and not in a manner that was inconsistent with church policies or practices. We have cases in Utah, a case, transportation involving your member, Joy, in Utah, that's mm-hmm. moving forward. We have a case where in New Mexico involving parental rights, involving the taking of children related to cannabis, and relates back again to religious rights as well as a constitutional right to parent. On the non-church side, we've been helping a family in Kansas, which the children are Native American as well. The church is stepping in to help with those, get those children back for the Schwab family in Kansas. We've had cases in Florida, one involving an issue of transportation of cannabis from or materials from outside of the United States into the United States, one, several in Alabama. They're just all around the country. And that's why it's important for people to support what we're doing. We can't do it for free. It's not something we can do for free. And we've had a little bit of trouble getting people to support this. Well, listen, if you believe in your rights, we need to have some support. And I'm not some pastor standing up here for a church telling you to call the pay the prayer line. That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying let's all get together and put a few dollars in if necessary through PayPal to make a donation to support the cause and move this forward so that we can do the work necessary to ensure that these religious rights are protected, that they're not something that people step on. The police are aware of them. We need to make them aware of them. We need to do that. So, and there's more cases, Joy, but that we've got the case of Sierra, who was trying to come across the border from Mexico with peyote and a number of just very, very old artifacts, you know, Native American artifacts. And in Nogales, the Border Patrol folks, 10 of them, attacked this 70-year-old man, tackled him, took all of that from him, despite his religious rights. He tried to come back through Texas, and we had more problems. We talked to the United States attorney down there. Sergio did a tremendous amount of work on this case. And still having problems, we're going to have to sue them because they're violating RFRA. I mean, it's just a number of cases and issues where this should not be happening in our country. Now, do we have successes? Of course. Keeping Brandon out of jail pending the appeal is a big success. Having Matt Abel work on that is a big success. We've worked in a number of places where there have been city attacks on churches, and we've been able to stop those up without litigation. But where there are problems, where we are present to stop those, we need the support of the membership and of the branches to make these things happen. And, things don't happen if people don't participate. It's just like voting. And I'm sure the folks that listen to this radio show, other than the BIA lovers and enemies of this whole idea of freedom, the freedom fight, the freedom enemies, those people, everybody that listens to this has an interest, and even those people have an interest in not seeing what we have here become a divide and conquer, not having the police state that this country has become. And I believe, this because I've had these dreams, despite me being non-religious, I've had these dreams after going out with James in the desert and going through a blessing ceremony with peyote. I've had these dreams, and I know that this seventh generation of indigenous American people is supposed to rise up and make these changes to protect the earth, not to kill people and have wars again like we did in the 1800s, but to work together hand in hand with people of every race, every society in this country, every type of person, to move forward the idea of protecting Mother Earth. That doesn't come at, you know, everybody just sits back, watches TV, and expects things won't change. You got to vote, you've got to participate, and you've got to be somebody that really cares about what's happening. I think there's enough of those people now, because there's enough people that have been hurt by things to make that happen.
Well, for the listeners who might want to help donate, how do they get the donation to where it will be properly utilized? That's a question I'm getting from a lot of the Aquila members.
Well, Joy, right now what we've done is we've set up a branch, the Life Church of Onak. It's being administered by Peter Tran and Pat McNeil. And that group is setting up a system so that donations are available. Donations can be made online. and can be done telephonically. There's just a number of ways of doing it. I don't have those particulars right now, but what I'll do is get those to you as I get them from Peter and Patrick, and maybe you guys can coordinate with them on a web link for your listeners.
We will. We'll get that up on the page for this interview. And, oh, before you go, I'm not saying go right away, but can we learn anything from what happened with Michael Mooney's case? I guess it's a final decision that just came down.
Well, the Michael Mooney case, and it's a Ninth Circuit decision, so it's not final. It can still go up for on a writ of certiorari to the United States Supreme Court. I think the key there is you have a schism. There's been, and I think everybody, many people in the church know there's a rift between Michael and his father. And the arguments made there were that cannabis was a substitutionary type of sacrament to peyote. And as I read the opinion and looked at it, what that hinged on was it a substantial burden? Was the attack on the cannabis made by the government a substantial burden to that schism of the church? Because it's not the Oklahoma church. It's a schism of it that came from Michael Mooney. But the bottom line is their position that cannabis was a substitute sacrament. It's not a substitute sacrament. It's one of the primary sacraments of Oklahoma. And, you know, certainly there are, just like you have lots of tribes out there, some tribes didn't use peyote, some tribes didn't use ayahuasca, some didn't do this, some didn't do that. The idea is that these are all plants. And in Oklahoma and in its practices, cannabis is one of the key primary sacraments that's used. So it is a substantial burden when you are attacking somebody based on cannabis, where their primary belief, their primary sacramental functions and ceremonies are based on cannabis. Somebody like Joy, I don't think Joy is one of the peyote ceremony people, or James Mooney is that. James Mooney is less on the cannabis side, more doing peyote. The concept is that if the belief is sincere and it substantially impinges on that belief, then the level of review goes up to strict scrutiny. It's very difficult for the government to prove that its law is going to work. So in Michael Mooney's case, that's what the court hinged its decision on. It wasn't a substantial burden because cannabis was just supposedly the substitutionary sacrament. That's not how it is for these branches of the church that I've been working for, and for the church overall, as I've been involved with it for the last 6 months or a year. And again, I mentioned earlier that, you know, as with the Church of the Flying Spaghetti, this doesn't have to be something that happened 800 years ago to make it valid. That could happen 2 weeks ago and it could be valid. Okay, that's not, religion isn't based on some archaic idea. All this kind of cockamamie stuff I hear, it's just nutball. Think about it. A belief, an idea, a concept, a religious belief doesn't have to be 2,000 years old to be valid. That's just silly. And mm-hmm. The fact is, cannabis is a critically important component, and it's become more important because on the Western side, we've seen the number of healing benefits it provides. And there's no reason that knowledge can't be used and become part of what has reinforced it as a sacrament for the Native American religion, is there? There's no reason that can't do that. The idea of these, and again, courts will, these judges, these federal judges, and hopefully some of them are listening to me. I asked the California Supreme Court at one point to disbar me. I'm not going to sit back and not say what I believe or what I think because of some idiot set of rules created by courts and these people that want to control everything. The bottom line is this. We need to be able to speak what our ideas are. Courts should not be twisting things. They should not be twisting. You know, these Republicans talk about legislating from the bench, but that's all they want. When it suits them, if they want that. They want the legislation from the bench. The idea that they would twist this thing the way that they did on the substantial burden concept is, again, another judicial tool. And I think what we have to clear things up like that are the Supreme Court and some of the higher appellate courts. But more than that, we have public opinion, and it's critically important people go out and express that public opinion, because when these judges and these politicians know that people are watching them and are going to hold them accountable, then they do the right thing. But if they're not, if they don't know that, they don't do the right thing. So it's important to be out in the press. It's important to be out in front of people, and it's important for people to express, you know what, we're not putting up with this anymore. And that's
right.
What we have to do. So.
Yeah, and I
anyway,
think that's
that
one of the
case,
main things to stress out to the, you know, the listeners is, I mean, as much as James really is hesitant to have the term used, ACLAVA is, in essence, a civil rights search based on the laws and our birthrights of being born here in North America, and that, you know, the only way that we're going to have a chance at protecting and preserving our rights as well as the earth is if we join together collectively.
And
you
that
know?
Joint
and that's,
is exactly what expresses what I was saying about the what is essentially a system, an empty system. When we get up and we say, we're going to pass a law called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, and we're going to protect minority religions, and we're going to and we pass the ADA, the Americans, and we're going to protect disabled people, and we're going to, and we're just, we don't follow those laws, so that people at Oklahoma have to consider themselves a civil rights church. You shouldn't be having to fight for this. You shouldn't be having to stand up to these bigots and these people who think that only their Christian religion is correct. I'm Christian, but I know that other people can have beliefs that are valid. I'm not going to hold my thought process against other people, not against the Native American religion and not against the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to laugh at it. I'm not going to find it funny, because these are people's beliefs, and especially when it comes to a Native American belief, because these are the people that were here before we were. We stole their country from them, okay? So when it comes to those ideas, you shouldn't have to think that you're a civil rights church, that Oklahoma has to be a civil rights church, because we shouldn't be going through this fight to begin with. And the fact is, when Bureau of Indian Assassins and these people, they live on divide and conquer. They want the Native Americans fighting amongst one another. They thrive. That's how the United States wins its battles. And everybody falls into the trap. People need to unite and work together. Martin Luther King knew that. We need to unite. We need to have a common focus to reach a goal. That's how we win. Not when we're mired in divide and conquer that our enemy wants us to be mired in. And the sheer fact that you're saying we're having to be a civil rights church is to me, the sad part of this. Because you shouldn't have to be. Your rights should have been preserved before you had to fight in court, before you have to spend this money, before I have to get on the phone and beg for money. They've got all the money in the world to fight, and they want us begging for money to fight, and they want to destroy through divide and conquer. We cannot have that. We have to be united. We have to stand together and understand that an inclusive concept will save this planet. It's the only way it'll work. And James Mooney is right in those thought processes.
Absolutely.
Well, Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you
so much.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I'm a little bit fiery this afternoon.
That's okay. That's okay.
A little bit more fiery.
We prefer our guests that way, don't we,
Blue Water? I guess Sunday. Perfect time for a fire and brimstone speech by Matt Patterson.
Hey.
All right, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you bet.
Well, thank you for coming on, Matt. We appreciate it and your time and your wisdom, of course. And thank you for defending ACLAVA and helping us to protect our members and our freedoms as Native-born people.
You know, more,
because without you,
I said something this morning after the radio show. I don't mean to interrupt you, Joy, but I do for a second. You're thanking me. Let me thank you and the people that are standing up and fighting. Because if we don't fight, we can't prevail. And so I was thanking the folks this morning, the people that fight for medical cannabis for the patients. And just as much as them, that's the same thing going on here, the healing ceremonies that you're standing up for. I'm an attorney, and I can stand up, but you face the battles every day. You're the people that get put in prison for your beliefs. Thank you for standing up against bad government, and thank you for being willing to make a statement out there, even with the threat of these government actions looming over you. You are the people that make the difference. And I will be here to fight for you, but I need everybody to stand up and fight together, united.
Right. Well,
amen.
Hopefully we can, definitely. Hopefully we can inspire the rest of the listeners to at least, you know, give it a second look and consideration, because like you said, the more we have standing up, the more we're going to get somewhere with it.
So. The better it will be as a united group. All right, thank you guys. Take care, and I'll hopefully be on your show again in the near future.
Absolutely.
I promise not to be as fiery next time.
we prefer our guests that way.
Okay. All right. And I'll be fiery next time.
Okay.
Thanks, Joy.
Thanks a lot. Well, next in line, we've got Brother Jim Diamond, who I just met over the last couple of days. And he's a member of Auckland Native American Church of Acts, A-C-T-S, like the Book of Acts, I suppose. And Jim, thanks for joining us. We just met you a couple nights ago when talking with Dr. Rogers. And before we ask you some questions, we'd like to tell you a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind. And in order to do that, we need your full birth date, if you don't mind.
My full birth date is April the 5th, 1955.
That's April 5th.
Did you hear me?
April 5th, 1955.
All right.
Okay.
We're Badger's going to do a Mayan birth reading on you. He's converting your birth date into your Mayan birth date, and he'll explain what that sign is and. Everybody says it gives them a good insight into themselves, but while he's doing that, let me play a little message here for a second.
Okay.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Auckland Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. And I just had to get that crass commercial message in there. But anyway, for listeners that... If you like a reading, go to NativeAmericanChurch.us and we'll hook you up. So what do you got to say about Jim Diamond and his birthday?
Well, Jim's birth in the traditional Mayan day count in the Zulcan is on a day called Tenahau. Ahau is the glyph of the sun. And it tends to pull in all the energies from the other glyphs. And it the ten... has to do with the creativity of things and flowing. And then the Ahau is the sun. It's both the elder and the child, both aspects of the sun. And like I said, it tends to pull in the entire energies of all the other system. The other thing that's kind of noteworthy of this particular day, Ten Ahau, is it... It actually occurred on another interesting point in history. It occurred on July 13th, 1917. It was on that day in Portugal that the three children of Fatima were given a message, a series of messages. We've recently found out a little bit more that those messages include what the Kopi called the purification. So he might be interested in looking a little bit at that. Because with his birth sign on that, it would be maybe pretty interesting. Now,
well,
switch gears a little.
As far as creativity, I mean, the man creates custom log homes. So he's, and if you go to his website, of course, his website link is on the page here, and you can see the kind of work that he does. And but anyway, go ahead.
So we'll switch over now into Six Sun Vulcan and have a couple of things, interesting developments. There's a Mayan elder now teaching this, and also recently the head of the Mayan elder clan, from what I understand, recently when the other elder went to Guatemala and visited the highland elder and the lowland elders both, especially the highland elders, they actually did a blessing on it. So things are kind of moving along in terms of them gaining this awareness and understanding of this new Zulcan, or outgrowth of the current Zulcan. So this part of the reading is going to have three aspects to it. A forward flow of time, a backward flow of time, and where the two time flows come together, a unity. Kind of represents our present world cycle, the next world cycle, and where the two world cycles, the bridge or doorway between them, or the balancing point, zero point in terms of free energy terminology. So we'll deal with the forward flow of time, the way we normally perceive time. Our senses are set up to detect that. And on his, so this will be things that going from birth forward till now. His seemed to say that pretty much all his life, maybe even before he came in here, he has a pretty strong connection to Creator. A very strong sense of harmony, oneness, what the Mayan call Inlakesh, Omotakiyasin, and stuff like that, and also balance. Correct actions, kind of doing things, you know, the right way. Pretty big on, probably has tunes into prophetic things of different, not just native, but maybe all of them. Probably has a above normal interest in personal liberation of people, personal liberation, stuff like that. And obviously that liberation would involve the connection, helping people connect back into Creator, one of our big topics of our show a lot of times. So he seems to probably have carried that pretty much his whole life and probably been a pretty big guidance and probably inspired a few other people with it too. On the backward flow, the way we normally don't, what we normally don't see that our senses do not pick up on, you know, our five senses, but our psychic senses can pick up on this. A lot of times psychics are actually tuning into this particular time flow, which is moving backwards. And on his, it's, remember we're just talking about prophecy stuff, this is a lot. So probably in these things in recent years, you know, we usually say 1997, 98, a little bit before, a little bit after that, somewhere in that time frame, getting stronger. So aspects of prophecy, especially when they have to do with universality of things, the general intention and service, has probably become a bigger component of his life in terms of how to help others and serving others has probably become more in the forefront of his life. A little bit of things about here about the polarity and the challenges of that, you know, the negative, positive, however you wish to define that, things like that, dealing with those things, which, you know, all of us do. A little bit here about guiding energy of the atoll or the water, things that look, watch for things that have to do with water as being kind of a guide, helpful energy. And water actually is a highly receptive. It will literally memorize energy thought patterns. So you kind of have to be careful when you're around water because it remembers everything that you think or do or in your intentions. That comes from a Dr. Emoto in Japan. He died about a year or so ago, and he talked about that a lot. the sign also, the water thing, also has a parallel thing that goes into the Hopi purification stuff. So that's coming back in, and that connects back with what I said about his Tenahau and the Fatima and the purification message there. So these two things come together, creator on one side, and then this thing about prophecy and the water and all that stuff coming together. And they come together in the unity of the same glyph again that has to do with the prophecy and the water and all that. And it's exactly the same thing. The thing it's bringing in that's a little bit different here, two other aspects to watch for that are going to be important to move from between the world cycles. All those other things I talked about already are important, but there are two new key little components that are a little bit different here, and that is, we'll make it three. Teaching, community and cooperation within the community, and truth. Those are going to be key elements for him to, for himself to move through from one world to the next, and to also bring some other people with him. So I see him stepping more and more, if not already doing it, stepping more and more into a role of a teacher, and especially teaching things about community, cooperation of people, things with truth and balance.
Well, what do you think about that, Jim?
Well, we'll all accept it. I will. And, you know, it's amazing how a lot of that is true. You know, I'll just have to say that. I've never had somebody read me, you know, what they felt
like
about me or what I'm going to be doing. Yeah. But it the majority of it is true, has been, is, and it's what I plan to do in the future. Sure is.
Outstanding. Well, yeah, just let the spirit roll, and, you know, tell us about yourself and how you got involved with Aqualung.
Right, I'll do it. Okay. Well, it confirms what was just said, in that the reason I got involved with Aquafa is not because of sacraments or anything like that, because I've never been big on sacraments, not at all. But I have been, and I agree with Mooney on, it's all about the spirit.
Absolutely.
It's all about the spirit. And moving into this next realm that we're getting ready to move into, which I think is more important than most of the people realize, both in whatever church they go to. The majority of churches are clueless about what's happening or what's going to happen. And it is so important to enlighten people that, hey, you need to get a connection with, just as he said, Father God, the Creator, and knowing what he is saying. And that's what's so important. And the reason why I got involved with Aquafa is because of the liberties and the freedoms that it gives you. Now, as I said, I was never big, and I've never been big on sacraments, but I am big on liberty. Just as the attorney was talking about a while ago, I think his name's Stan, is that correct?
Matt, yeah.
Matt, okay, Matt. What Matt said is that it's important. I don't care what church it is. You'll fight for their freedom. You need to, because, you know, if you don't fight for their freedoms, then who's going to be here to fight with you for your freedoms? And I know the United States government, and we're losing our liberties and our freedoms every day, and it's important that we fight for those freedoms, whatever they be.
Yeah, and that's one of the beauties of Aqualung.
Yep. And that's why. Now, I do know that the United States has broke treaty after treaty after treaty, but the way I see it is it's just another obstacle they're going to have to jump over to come and take my freedom and my liberties.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why, pretty much why, I joined Aqua. And it's amazing how it's come full circle, because we've been with the church for over a year, and it's full circles. And then I found out about Dr. Rogers and yourself, and here y'all all have the same connection. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, when you contacted us, you didn't even know we were Oklahoma.
No, not at all. No, I didn't even know Dr. Rogers was the chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. Didn't know any of that. But I was seeking for someone that was willing to go beyond the standard protocol of medical treatment.
Yeah.
And
well,
glad
he'll sure do it.
You know, I found y'all.
Well, we're glad you found us. And so you joined an existing branch there in Arkansas, Missouri?
Yes, sir. I joined with the Native American Church. That is Yiska and Judah, Chief War Eagle, out of Lebanon, Missouri. I met them at a preppers meeting at their booth. They were talking about the Native American Church of Acts, and were, you know, I was interested because I'm interested in providing for ourselves as the Native Americans did. I think what's happened is you know, we need to prepare for ourselves, and we don't need to depend upon the government, because when we do, we give them control over us, and I hate somebody controlling me.
Yeah, exactly. And well, I'm very familiar with your neck of the woods. I lived there for several years, and it's a gorgeous area. And you live, you know, right across the river from what used to be, I guess, the capital of the White River Cherokees. A lot of people don't know that there was, from 1817 to 1834, I guess it was, the Cherokee Nation West was right there in northwestern Arkansas. And if you go...
That is correct.
Started a little bit south. You can look up Lovelys, Lovelys Purchase, and you can see a map of it. And so tell folks a little bit about that.
Okay, what we've done is we bought some land. We have some land here right off the White River, and it's where the what's called, and you can look this up, it's called the Piney. The Piney enters the White River, and that's just below Calico Rock, Arkansas. And we live right there on the White River. And from my house, I can look to the west, over towards the river, and look right across a low gap in a bluff, and look at the hill in the meadow where the village was. There's springs and everything up on side the mountain there, and it's a huge, big meadow that I was told that this is where the Cherokee had their village, is where the prophet and Tecumseh's mother, they went there. In fact, Tecumseh's mother first went there. She went with the first part of the Shawnee and the Cherokee when they moved down there. Tecumseh stayed, and the prophet stayed to fight. And naturally, as we know history, I believe it is Tecumseh died at the Falling Timbers. Prophet left and came down here to be with his mother, stayed here for a while before they moved on over into Oklahoma. Now, on my property was the site of the city of Athens, which was an outpost for everybody going into Indian territory. And this is on my property. In fact, on my property, there was at one time five streets of the town of Athens, which was later, they just left it, and some individual bought the property. But the one of the first courthouses in Izard County, Arkansas, was right here on our property. And John Houston, the brother of Sam Houston, the noted Sam Houston, both half Cherokee, were right here. And we've been told that is very likely that, in fact, the headstone is on our property, of John Houston.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah, Sam. Sam was quite a while. He quite a guy. He was governor here in Tennessee and got fed up, and went to join his adopted father, John Cholley,
and I guess he married John Jolly's daughter. And he was the Kalanu, or the Speaker of Council for Cherokee Nation West. And of course, the rest is history, you know, concerning Texas. And a lot of people don't know about the history of the Cherokees in Texas, and fewer yet know about the history of the Cherokee in Mexico. But yeah, if you want to tell folks a little bit about your business and what kind of things you create.
Okay, well, you know, I after I got out of school, I went into the Air Force, and I was a Vietnam vet. I worked on C-141s, B-52s, and after Vietnam, I got out and moved to Louisiana, went to college, got a degree in engineering, and worked in the oil field for 30 years. And I worked offshore, and we worked a 14 and 14 schedule, or, you know, a 7 and 7 schedule, where we were 7 days on, 7 days off. And on my days home, you know, I just couldn't sit around. So I got into business of building log homes. And I got with a company called Hearthstone, like a fireplace. And I fell in love with their building products and the way they built. There's plenty of other log home companies in the United States, and I've worked for some of the others and sold some of the packages for those particular homes, but they're nothing like Hearthstone. And the reason I'm saying that is because they have a warranty and a guarantee that nobody else will match. And that is my contract states, if I build a house for you, Will, or for the doctor or whoever, it says that if I build your house, you're not completely satisfied, I will take it down and I'll give you your money back.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
And that's a written contract. That's a written contract. Now, in the 23 plus years that I worked for them, with them as an independent distributor, I've taken down one house. And it wasn't to take it down totally. It was to take it down and turn a timber around where the mortise and tenon joints fit together perfectly. We could have took a shortcut. We could have made it happen by scabbing it in, what people call scabbing it in, and no one would have ever known.
Right.
But the homeowner, I asked him, I said, Bill, are you happy with it? And he said, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, our contract says that we'll do it in a professional workmanship-like method, and we'll do exactly what your prints say. And now, are you happy with that? He said, well, no. So we took the house down, turned the post around, put it back up. And you know what? I sold another log home because of that.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I know recently there's been a cable program, maybe in the last year, about building using timber and reclaimed materials. And I can't remember what it was called, but we watched every episode of it.
Right. Well, I've done that. In fact, last year I found an old barn built in the approximately 1870 that was hard pine with logs that was 15 inches tall, 8 inches thick, and up to 40 foot long. And we took that barn down, and we sold it to a customer who is building a modern log cabin out of it today.
Well, the other thing I noticed, I'm sitting here looking at Izard County, and I lived among some real hill people between 1999 and 2004 or 2005, and every one of them I asked, I said the Ozarks is beautiful, but if you could choose one place to live in the Ozarks, I didn't even have to finish the sentence. They all said Buffalo River. And that's down
Buffalo River is just north of us. That's correct. It is beautiful. But the thing is, see, right here where I live, I have almost like a little bit more than a quarter mile of creek frontage of the Piney Creek. And this is just before it enters the White River. And I mean just before it enters the White River. So I can have a boat from the White River right up to my property, get out of my boat, and come up to my house. So, you know, it's the way, in fact, that's where all the flat-bottom boats came up the river. They came up the Piney just a little ways here, and they unloaded their freight here for Athens.
So it's
a beautiful place.
What small town near Mountain View are you closest to?
Well, I'm closest to Calico Rock. Calico Rock is just north of Mountain View.
Gotcha.
Beautiful. I mean, it's just gorgeous up here.
Right. It's right there at the
raised.
Yeah, right there at the corner of the Buffalo National River Park.
That's right. Very close. You go up to North Fork and you're right there. It sure is. That's it. I mean, and there's people canoeing, rafting all the time up and down this river.
Well, tell folks, I saw a mention one time of the people that are in your branch. Could you tell us a little bit more about them and who they are and maybe what their ancestry is? And so I'd like to know some more about them.
Well, let me tell you. Well, since we joined the Native American Church, we have two neighbors that have joined the church, and we have another one that is going to join the church. And in fact, her brother is going to come down and meet with us, and they're going to meet with Judah and Yiska. And what they're saying is that they're going to join the Native American Church of Acts. They're people. They're common folks. They care for one another. They watch out for one another, and they respect one another's rights and freedoms.
Yeah, I had a Quapaw friend that was a good friend of my dad, and of course the Quapaw is a Siouan language. And I said, Jim, what's your traditional name? And he said, Yuska. And I said, what does it mean? He says, mean motor scooter.
Mean motor scooter. Now I think Yiska's name, her Cherokee name she goes by is Walks Afraid. I believe it's what her name is. Now, I don't know why she claimed that name or why she's got that name, but that's what she goes by, if I'm not mistaken. Walks Afraid is her name. Walks Afraid.
Yeah, there are so many different... So many different, I mean, it's thousands of people there of with real strong native blood there from everything you can imagine. People just flock to the Ozarks, and it's an unparalleled natural beauty. You know, not a lot of zoning, if any.
That's
correct. I know.
You're correct on that.
Yeah, and John Red Hat was born not too far from you. He at Ada, he was born in the 30s, and he was raised by two Katua women and a freed woman. John converted to Judaism. Well, he moved to Tulsa as a teen. He had some unbelievable experiences and dreams during World War II. He actually learned to speak German in his sleep. He was shown what was going on in the Holocaust. And he said the most surprising thing was the worst offenders weren't men and they were women, which is a real eye opener. But he, his family moved to Tulsa. Now this is a man that at the end of his life, all of his life, he was enrolled in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the United Katua Band. He had to be, you know, an older person to be in that neighborhood. But when the three principal chiefs of the U.S. federal recognized tribes were to go meet with the president, he was chosen to do the ceremonial work at the meeting before they were to go meet. Ultimately, the meeting was canceled. But he, if you can go to Katua Society.org, KEETOOWAH Society.org, and you can see a picture of John. And he was my traditional teacher from 1999 until his passing wonderful guy. He spent 30 years in the Air Force. He allowed that he did a little flight testing for CIA. When he didn't actually say that. He just said he flew an F-111 with an iridium skin. That means he was flying very high and very fast. And so he retired as a full bird colonel. And but he was also a rabbi, listed as a rabbi with the American Jewish. It was the body for the Reformed Jews. And I ran across another rabbi who knew him. But he was this other rabbi had also been in the Air Force and knew Rabbi Duke, John Red Hat Duke. But anyway, so I'll quit raving about the Ozarks, and we got about 10 minutes left. If anybody's got anything they'd like to add.
Well, I would like to thank our guest for his service for our nation, because, I mean, without him, Aqua wouldn't have anything to be trying to stand up and defend and preserve. So.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And you know, the key is we have to fight today.
Yeah.
And we have to be watchful. We do. I mean, it's so important. And we have to teach our children, because the majority of our children have no clue. You know,
that's right.
We got to be praying for them, and we got to teach them. It's just like,
yeah,
like you said a while ago, we need to be teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we're responsible. You know, we're borrowing today from the future generation. So if we don't take action and we don't stand up and we don't join together and get the changes needed in place, I mean, where's that going to leave the future generation? You know, I mean, I personally can't have kids myself because of health issues,
yeah.
But I mean, I can't help but to look around and see so many of my members with their children, you know, and becoming grandparents and thinking, man, we have got to fix this. We got to fix it now. Because they're not just destroying us by divide and conquer, like Matt said, but they're destroying the earth beyond, you know, history as far as the damage. It's just it's gotten so out of control. I know Aquila is going to be involved with the Archangel program next month. We're going to have our members out in the Redwoods, and they're out there now collecting different species and whatnot and categorizing them. And, you know, Aqua members are going to be out there in Northern California into Southern Oregon planting redwoods next month, you know, just because it needs to be done. And, you know,
wow.
Aqua is not just about sacraments or controlled substances or, you know, freedoms, or it's all of it. It's all encompassed. We're all a part of this web. And, you know, if we don't step up and do something now, it's going to be too late for the future generations. They should not have to endure. Like today, I mean, most of the kids today think drug testing is commonplace, you know, but it hasn't been. It's new. Like Matt said, you know, they're implementing laws daily, and people are just, you know, they're quietly mumbling, oh, look what they did, but that doesn't change anything. That doesn't get anything done. It doesn't fix the problems that we're having, you know, and so I'm so grateful. I'm so honored to stand amongst Aqua. And, you know, especially our warriors, our veterans, you know, I'm just so honored that we are in a position where we can pick up that torch and continue to fight for what our veterans have been fighting for so many generations, which is our freedom, our right to live and exist, you know. And so I'm just honored to have you and all of our other military veterans that are joining with us, because we owe, those of us who have not served our country, we owe the veterans that have, you know, because if we don't, then everything that you guys have gone through is in vain. And so I'm honored to be a part of Aqua. I'm honored to stand with all of us as the warriors, you know, to force this change and get it done. And hopefully we can get it done in time to where it will make a positive difference for the future generation. So I thank you so much for your service. You know, we cannot, not just as Aqua, but we as the people here, born here, we cannot begin to even repay or emphasize how much gratitude and how much debt we owe our military veterans. And that's one of the big things that I loved about Aqua, is that they really are geared at honoring our veterans and continuing to bring the honor that you guys initiated out there in the combat fields and what you went through. because, I mean, without you guys making those sacrifices, we would not have any freedom. And even though we're losing it daily, you know, I mean, we wouldn't have any today to lose tomorrow if it wasn't for our veterans. So I can't sing your praises enough and thank you enough for everything you've gone through. My family has been fighting for generations in these wars. My dad was prisoner of war in World War II to the Japanese for almost 4 years. He went in at 200 pounds. He came out at 80. So I know, you know, and I was really, really firmly raised to ultimately show the highest of respect to our combat veterans. And that's one of the things I love about Aqua is that, you know, our church really tries to do that and go, you know, that extra distance. It's where, you know, like you were saying earlier, a lot of these religions, you know, they're just so quick to say, well, there's a division between church and state, and so we're just going to sit in our box with our minds closed, and, you know, we're not going to realize the reality of the state of our nation right now. And so, therefore, those masses that are in these churches, they're not seeing, they're not getting, you know, until their kids are coming back from these wars and getting shot by cops with their bullets, you know, or their grandmother's being tased to death. They're not registering, you know, and so that's one of the main things that, you know, thank God that we have Aqua to be able to, you know, get that out of their boxes and say, hey, you know, while you're sitting over there in your comfort little, you know, your little zone over there, the rest of the world is suffering, and our church, Aqua, is not. Like Matt said, we are not going to stand for any more infringement on any of our members, our rights individually or collectively. And that's the goal of Aqua, is to get everybody individually to collectively come together and stand up for these things and get these things fixed. And so, you know, other than that, I can't think of any other words to, you know, just express the gratitude, you know, and the honor that Aqua has standing with our veterans and trying to get this world into the right course on the Red Road and off the Black Medicine Road, because that's, we so desperately need this right now. And so.
Absolutely. And we ask that everybody keep Brother Jim in their prayers.
Absolutely.
He's going to be going through a tough time, and he needs to know he's loved and supported. Well, folks, I guess that's it. We'll let everybody go, and we'll be here next week, same time, same station.
And thank you, Blue Water, for attributing John Trudell on your shows. It means a lot to me. He was one of my personal elder councils. I mean, if it wasn't for his support, I was really in fear, you know, presenting as a white hippie, as they call me, to get into Aqua. And I'll tell you, John was the foundation and the inspiration that I needed to be out here, you know, doing this for Aqua, you know, and taking the stand. I've had a lot of people say to me, you know, Joy, you better start watching out, because you're going from being a cannabis activist to a civil rights activist, and that's a lot more dangerous ground. Well, it shouldn't be. We should, like Matt said, we shouldn't have to be out here, you know, advocating or trying to defend anything. These are our God-given birthrights to exist. You know, and I pointed out to the Indian country, you know, I said, if each of us went back to the very spot that we were born here, the odds are that property is private, and we would be having police encounters telling us we're not allowed to be there. So, I mean, we've lost freedom beyond, and this got to stop now before we have none left.
Well, John,
John is inspirational for that, because his prophetic vision into the world is, you know, unfortunately for us, you know, I'm afraid that we might not have somebody with as much foresight as we were blessed to have in John. And so it means a lot to me that you honor him on your shows.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wanted to kind of just touch on this real quick. One of our elder members for Katamas Makia of Onak here, we lost another valued treasure elder member just a week ago from pneumonia. A lot of people probably know him. He's country music legend Merle Taggart. Was very honored to have him as part of our church. You know, we're going to put up a tribute on our website, you know, honoring him. But I just wanted to, you know, a lot of people are still unaware that Merle has passed on his birthday, too, of all days. But he passed away a week ago, April 6th, from pneumonia in his home. He'd been fighting it for over a year, and he was planning to come out on tour, and, you know, he was making good albums with, you know, our other church member, Willie Nelson, and The Whole World's Going to Pot, I think, is going to be a legendary song of his, especially for as far as my church is concerned. We're going to implement that into our singing.
Well,
you know.
Well, his song, you know, Where's All the Freedom We've Been Fighting For? And
right.
I'll tell you a little story. Joy, I think you've heard this. Back in 1976, after Bob Wills passed away, I was involved with a Western swing band and used to spend a lot of time at the Palomino. And I met Buddy Mize, who's now president of the Nashville Songwriters Association. And he arranged for our band to go meet Merle at a they were taping something at KCOP TV, and got to shake hands with him. And he was a very quiet, kind of diminutive guy. And but that we ushered back to the bus, and we sat with his bodyguard and bus driver about 30 years, and the guy sparked one. And I mean, he said. He says, "Oh," he said, "didn't you know what? Did we know what?" He says, "Well," he said, "you know, before Okie from Muskogee, people were bringing us groceries." He said, "Okie from Muskogee was written as a joke." He said, "We were in a bus passing through Muskogee, and you know, we were all enjoying a nice high, and we just started writing this song." and that was amazing. And but yeah, Merle, yeah, and I was really privileged to work with Warren Purcell and other people from the Grand Ole Opry and so forth, and it was a great part of my life. But listen, we better run.
Okay. Well, blessings to everybody. Be well. Go in a good way in Blue Water. Keep making the good medicine.
You bet. And thanks a lot, Jim. I'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Wane washie, a te no makia yo mia nomene, a te na mechi ho mia nomene yo wa, a shina che.
They have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.